Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests, who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bhattori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP, or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon, evening to everyone, and to our viewers from Far East, good night.
Welcome back to week 7 of season 3. Our show is about impact investment, and the theme of this season is impact investing, the new normal. Why impact investing is so important for our planet and people living on it? Because it is a driving force behind capital shift towards true impact, where positive social and environmental changes go along financial return. And of course, impact investing is the force for good, for driving force to achieve sustainable development goals, SDGs.
And today we need it more than ever.
Exactly. And you know, funny thing, yesterday I was invited at an event where a lot of bankers were present, and I needed to explain nearly to everyone I had a conversation to what are SDGs. So we are still at the beginning of the new normal. But yeah, we'll do our best.
Exactly. And although we are really aware and very thankful that people from even from Canada to Far East are watching us, but still, before we continue, I just want to give a quick reminder to you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, not to miss any of the future exciting episodes. And you can do that by simply going to youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
And good news for those who want to learn about impact investing and create or transform into profitable business with impact, in the next 4 months, we are going to give 4 trainings which will transform your business or business idea into massive success. And the topics are about impact inclusion, impact measurement, how do you measure impact, right? How do you develop business successfully in this sector? How you find and select investors in impact investing? And of course, how do you pitch and negotiate win-win-win deals there? So it's all published on chamomile.ch. Take the opportunity and learn with us. Before we invite our guest, Ben, would you like to share a short story?
Yeah, I'll keep it very short today. So I have a request to all our audience around the world. I don't think that we have to convince anyone today that our future hangs in a balance. Most of us are looking with expectation and hope towards Glasgow for the COP26, the UN climate conference. But what worries me, it just 2 days ago, it came out that some countries and very powerful lobby groups have been working behind the scene to force the scientists to change the key points in the climate report to be presented at COP26. Even apparently rich countries like Australia and Saudi Arabia arguing that the world does not need to reduce the use of fossil fuels as quickly as the current draft of the report recommends. So my request to you is to communicate with your representative who is coming to the COP26. Yeah.
We all should come together and ask our leaders or representatives to think and rise above petty politics, power game, and short-term economic benefits. For once, just this once, leaders have to understand 2 basic facts, that they do not represent only the country, but the whole humanity. And despite all our differences, we all share the same planet Earth. And the second point is that damages to the biodiversity and environment and climate change are irreversible. You know, I'm a bit nervous because it's so important. So despite of that, right, and despite of all the advanced technologies out there and propaganda we hear, it is irreversible. So, yes.
And the rise of sea level will damage the coastal cities, not only of the United States, but it will just damage as much of China. So please rise and be a true leader.
Mm-hmm. So honestly speaking, we are sometimes tired of traveling around the world, convincing people. So today we just go to our neighboring country, Liechtenstein. And with this, I'd like to welcome our guest of today, Mr. Reto Möhr. Please, Reto, come into the studio.
Welcome, yes, Reto. Nice.
Good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that warm welcome. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really excited.
Are you in Liechtenstein right now?
I'm in Liechtenstein, exactly. Yeah, this small place in between Europe and exactly. I'm here in Ruckel. This is close to the borderline, and when I look out of the office, it's a lot of green, a lot of forest, a lot of nature. So I have a big view in front of me, you both, and on the around me, the pure nature. So everything is fine with me.
great. Sounds good. Reto, before we start, I'd like to quickly introduce you to our audience who don't know you yet. So Reto Möhr is the Managing Director of Enabling Microfinance, EMF. He has over 20 years of experience in the financial industry and has been involved in impact investing for over 10 years in various management positions at banks, asset managers, and so on. You are also EMF representative in the Association of Charitable Foundations and Trusts in Liechtenstein. Reto, right. You are also very committed to Sustainable Financial Center in the Principality of Liechtenstein. Is it right? You're committed.
That's not all.
That's not all. Let me give a few words about Enabling Microfinance. So Enabling Microfinance, or EMF, is an independent provider of microloans for more than 12 years with a vision to catalyze access to capital where it is needed most. Enabling Microfinance promotes financial inclusion to people in developing economies currently overlooked by financial system. EMF is fully owned by the charitable Enabling Microfinance Foundation. And today, your impact is enormous. So EMF has reached over 6 million people and helped them to build a sustainable livelihood for themselves and their families. Wow, that's great. That's really huge.
So what we always talk about, you do it.
Right. So
yeah, right. It's, I think it's, that's the most important thing, at least. In our small scale, we need to do something, of course, yeah. I mean, it's exactly. As in the introduction, it's needed more than now. And of course, yes.
Mm-hmm. And today we are going to talk a lot about how do we turn poverty into opportunity, because it's really very important for billions of people on our planet. So Reto, before we start and dive deeper in the material, can you please introduce yourself and share more of Enabling Microfinance activities, which I didn't mention yet?
Yeah, you did mention a lot, basically. So yes, I'm Reto Möhr. I'm over 20 years involved in the financial space. For me, it was pretty clear since many years ago. Sustainability is something which is important in our industry. At that time, it was not really that popular than these days. And especially with impact investing, I mean, it was basically one key experience I had. It was many years ago. I visited Madagascar, at the time, quite a poor country. And I saw these people with this gloomy view, with this no perspectiveness and everything. So a lot of children walking around. And what can we do? And of course, in general, the poverty has been reduced over time, luckily. But there's so many things still, though. Many people not reached by the financial system. and excluded from financial system. So I decided, what can I do to, in my small case, as I mentioned before, to help them. And as I mentioned, I was also in sustainable finance involved in different things. I was ESG. I did start with the ESG research at the local bank here in Liechtenstein. And during that time, when I visited Madagascar, suddenly I got in contact with IMF. I know that name already since it was, as you mentioned, it's the fund has been launched already in 2008. And they asked me whether I would join the company to start with the contribution, this distribution of the fund. And that was for me pretty clear to do that. So I'm based, my track record is in the financial industry, but the last 10 years I've been focusing more and more on the impact part, and especially in the microfinance business. Mm-hmm. And I'm managing director since now 3 years, and I like the job. And so day by day we can actually help, and this is most important for me.
That sounds so good. I mean, usually people like their jobs in impact investing, even though it's finance related, but the beauty of the job is that you create impact, right?
It has
yes, exactly. When you deal with money, it's always, I mean, it's at least it's more tangible, I would say. And mm-hmm. I have been to a field trip 2 years ago in Georgia at that time. And it was so, for me, so impressive how to see people, how it works, the whole industry, and to see it, the impact. And this is something which gives a lot to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Reto, we wanted to start with the topic, how do we turn poverty into opportunity? Can you explain what do you mean by this statement and elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was thinking a lot about these questions even all every day, and especially at the beginning when I joined the company. It's, you know, there are two different ways, actually two options to help people getting out of poverty. One way is just to spend money, to donate money, to give them money to help. This is, of course, a good option, and in many, many cases, it's very, very worthy and helpful. But there's another part of people in these poor countries. We call them so-called active poor. They have mm-hmm. skills, they want to do something, but they're fully excluded from financial system. So they have no chance to start a business. And I think this is a huge opportunity for us, especially in the financial industries. And we say that it's moving to meaning. So we move the money to the people they need it, and to help them, to help themselves at least. And this is the key story about it. And so we help in the financial industry people getting out of poverty and build up a sustainable livelihood for them and the families. And on the other hand, you get a stable return for the investors. I mean, this is a good combination. And I think this is a huge opportunity based on these people to help them. And also, on the other hand, to have a product in the portfolio for investors who is quite stable, low correlate to all other asset classes, and a winning win-win situation for both sides, I guess.
Right. Maybe for those who never heard the word microfinance before, you can give a quick definition that everyone can understand.
Yeah, exactly. So in a couple of words, it's just, as mentioned, it's unsecured loans. People, they're excluded from the financial system. They have no bank accounts. They want to build up a business, small business, for example. They want to buy a cow to produce milk. They have everything, but no money to finance that. And that is exactly the client where microfinance is actually addressing. So to help them by helping build up a sustainable business. And so this is a question of few words. It's more complex than that, basically, in fact. But to include them in the financial system and to help them getting out of poverty. So this is the main mm-hmm. target.
Okay.
And Reto, you are located in Liechtenstein. And I know yes. your country very well. And one of your prints has also been on our TV in the past. Mm-hmm. It's a very tiny kingdom, not very far from Zurich. And I have heard, or I know, that you have a very strong and high quality financial sector. Can you tell us briefly why you chose Liechtenstein to base your company? And what are the advantages of Liechtenstein for international investors?
Yeah, exactly. The reason for it is basically we are owned, as you mentioned in the introduction. We are one key USP of us is that we are independent of the key financial players like banks, for example. We are fully owned by a charitable cooperative foundation, which is owned by especially two big foundations here in the country. One is Hilti Foundation, one is Medico Foundation. It's a really big companies based here in Liechtenstein. And that is the reason why we are based here. But apart from that, you mentioned this is a stable finance market here, quite tiny, as you mentioned, close to Switzerland. We are. Mm-hmm, we have since 1942 a customs and a monetary union with Switzerland. So we have the Swiss franc, which is stable currency. We have no borderlines to Switzerland at all. So we are close to Switzerland. We have all the advantages of the Swiss financial markets. But on top, we are part of the European Economic Area. It means we have access to European markets as well. So we can have, with all the distribution and so on, we have this so-called EU passport. And on top, we are small. You mentioned that. Small means we are one country with stable politics on one hand, but we have also fast ways to, I say always, if something is very urgent and important, it's easier to get all the involved parties to a round table in a very short time. And we have authority, market authority, we have all the institution needed for a stable financial market. But we are flexible, and this small place combined with Switzerland and the EU, the access to European markets, I think that makes the Liechtenstein quite attractive. And also the banking sector is quite strong. We have at least three big banks in the country. One mostly is the most important one. The most famous one is LGT, yes, which is
the most
international
one. It's one of my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing sustainable investments for many, many years now. So they're quite strong in that. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Reto, how many micro lendings have you done till now? And what has been the default rate? So the ones remained unpaid.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, in total, we have roughly 1,700 loans dispersed so far. It's quite a lot.
In which amount? So we have an idea how big is the market where you're in.
Yeah, so currently the fund is around, we are nested in around roughly 300 million. Mm-hmm. Is currently the size we are invested in. And we are reaching currently 200,000 borrowers with this at the moment. And the default rate is very, very low. I mean, this is about of these 2,000 loans in general, which we have disbursed yet, the default rate is 0.1%, which is very low. And probably we'll talk later on the reasons behind that successful story, but it's very, very low.
So you don't want to share the exact number?
I mean,
I have read my report.
Nine out of roughly, I would say, of these 1,700 loans, exactly nine have been not fully paid back. So means fully paid back with its own provisioning, of course. There sometimes we need to do some provisionings, and partly will be paid back later on. But actually, I mean, the default rate, effectively the amount which we lost, total losses, I would say, is very, very low.
Yeah, and this is not only your experience. You know, the microfinance default rates are really lower than traditional credits for consumer credits over here in Europe, you know. So that's absolutely less risky, even though it might sound more risky, but in reality, the default rate is much lower. That's amazing. And another important question to all asset owners, which I want to ask you, what was your ROI, return on investment, been like, or yield?
Yeah, so there's one thing which I need to outline here quickly. The history of microfinance or of EMF, I need to explain that if you're allowed to me quickly. So the fund has been launched in 2008. It's a long track record, of course. But the first 10 years, it was a foundation, and foundation, of course, is not really that profit-oriented. So they wanted to to prove the concept first before they start going out and trying to hire to get more fund into more assets into the fund. So the first 10 years was more or more or less a bit not that they didn't want to distribute the fund to investors. And after that, the board decided to open that. They started with active distribution of the fund, and at the same time, we decided to restructure the fund in general. So at that time, we had mandated the fund to a specific asset manager, and then we decided to go in collaboration with Enabling Capital, which is a team which has been working together for a long time with more than 100 of the founders and partners. They have together more than 100 years experience in microfinance business. They worked for a competitor, and we merged. That means we work together now. We have restructured the share classes. We have introduced new share classes. We reduced the costs. And also the portfolio has been changing a little bit. And since then, we started to grow, to be honest. It was really a huge, crazy year for us. Exactly 1 year ago, we started with 80 million in assets. Now we are at roughly $300 million in assets. Performance is very good. And this is really based on this Enabling Capital story, which helped us to grow in this way. And this is really key. And based on this foundation approach we have here from Liechtenstein with Hilti Foundation, with Medical Foundation, with this backbone and this asset management team, which has a long experience, I think this is a good combination and helps us to grow that way. It's really crazy what's going on currently, but we are lucky how it works.
So. No, but today you must have noticed that Svetlana is doing most of the questions because I have a bad case of cold. So, but one of the most important questions that every asset manager, owner or investor asks is what is your return on investment has been like in the past?
Sorry, this is what I wanted to. I have like a huge curve now. I come to the point. So our target is to achieve 4% in US dollar. Which we will achieve this year. Of course, we have now until September a return of 3.57%. So we'll definitely reach the 4%. This is our target. In the past, it was a bit lower than that. More or less, the reason for was just explained to you because it was not the structure we had. But we are very stable. There were not 1 year in our history with a negative performance, another one quarter with a negative performance. It's quite stable, and exactly we target 4% in US dollar. This is our target yield for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for microfinance, 4%, it's rather high, you know. I know some of microfinance funds here in Switzerland, they provide only 2% or maybe 1.5%. So I find this is very stable. What is required to keep it so stable, actually? So what are you guys doing?
This is a good question. I mean, It's all about people, at least. I mean, if you do microfinance business, the entry barrier is quite high. As I mentioned, the investment team is important to have these people around the world. I mean, we act in different continents, in Latin America, in Asia, in Africa. We have at least our investment teams counts around 30 people located in these areas. Deal sourcing, very important. It's not an asset class which you can actually manage at home from Bloomberg or whatever. So all these things need to be in place. We have an internal risk team. We have an internal risk process. To give you an idea, when we invest in a so-called microfinance institutions, maybe I can later on explain the whole process. So this is at least a memorandum of more than 50 pages, you know. So everything needs to be...
I read some of those, you know, when I was working at the bank.
Story sounds very, very simple, but the work behind it's very, very tough. And I mean, it's as I mentioned, I can just repeat myself. It's about people, experienced people, they know it's trust. And this was exactly what showed us in the last year of COVID. So how in this specific time, which everything is quite challenging. So how they work together, the collaboration within the teams, the communication and so on between the different stakeholders. And I think this is key, of course.
But talking about COVID-19, so what has been the impact on your performance or client market? How did that impacted your business?
Sorry, Sweater, I didn't
Yeah,
get
okay,
your
let
questions.
Me repeat it one more time. So talking about COVID-19, what has
yes.
been the impact on your performance or client market by this event?
Yeah, honestly, there was a situation now, as I mentioned, the new asset management team took over the portfolio last year, exactly at that time around spring when this COVID thing happened. So we had a lot of cash at that time. So the impact in our fund was very, very limited. But what you can see in general that, I mean, these countries, they used to deal with crisis every year. They're always crisis, you know. And we are also invested in basic things. So means agriculture is a big topic. Food chain is a big topic. And in these countries, it has been turned to normality in a very short time. So in end of second quarter last year, we saw already in the microfinance industry that everything has been normalized again. And this is exactly what makes this industry so specific. It's you know, these basic things, they need to work, you know, otherwise they have no chance to survive. So this is a good example how it works, especially in crisis. I mean, we had different crises in the past. Yeah. And in every crisis, there was almost no big default rates. This is the reason mm-hmm. for it. People need to do something. They need to survive. And crisis is something they deal with since many, many decades.
And what is your success story behind? Because you have made quite very successful your company and everything. And you are active in a not only as a pioneer, but you are active also in a very, how do you say, for the normal Western investors, an unknown market. Like the emerging market, Asia, Africa, you even mentioned Georgia. So how is it for you? What do you think is your reason for success in these markets?
Exactly. Yeah. I think the most, as I mentioned, I mean, it's a team approach. We have quite an entrepreneurial spirit. So we are not really, I would say one of the key aspects is that we are just working currently, or we are focusing on one pure microfinance product. We do not have different other products, so we are focusing just on that. And in addition to that, we are focusing on a specific niche in the microfinance industry, or the microfinance market. So it means we call that micro entrepreneurs, small and medium enterprises. We explain it later on in a case study. So we try to assist there where the impact is very high. And of course, you can also invest in microfinance industry. You can also invest in bigger companies. They're still in microfinance industry, but we want to focus on micro, small and medium enterprises. And we do it exactly this for many years since the beginning. This strategy has been in place since the start of the fund. Mm-hmm. So we don't do anything else. It doesn't mean we are not working on business development and on the products, of course, but we think we want to focus on that. And what we also do is, for us, it's important to be transparent to investors. We are a boutique. We don't want to scale up. We want to focus on that, what we know how to do and the knowledge we have and experience we have, and not doing anything else. I mean, this is probably the most important point.
I just wanted to say that you till now we are talking very much in the banking and investment world. But for normal people who are watching our TV, you had mentioned, you had promised two case studies, which can make us really understand what you are doing.
Exactly, so, yeah. So maybe we can quickly see the picture which I sent to you from a case in Pakistan. This girl is called Mavish. Mavish is a typical microfinance business. She's a sewer. So means she was asking for a microloan to buy a sewing machine, making some clothes, just to give a bit of an impression how it is in these rural areas. The most investments are in rural areas. They have no stores and different things like in the cities. Just is making uniforms for schools and so on. And she was asking, and she got a loan of 20,000 Pakistani rupees, around about $125 to buy just one sewing machine and started her business. And then it works well. Was the demand was good. She started to grow, and at least she wanted to buy a new machine, a second one. She hired new people, and at least she was qualified to hire a loan of about 60,000 rupees. It's roughly $375. And so it gets bigger and bigger, you know. The business starts and gets start growing, and then she gets more to a small and medium enterprises. She had at least $350 salary per month for her and the families, and this allows her to build up a house and to have an own apartment, business apartment within the house, doing all the business from there, hiring new people, and this is exactly what we want to do. We want to assist. We want to assist them from micro to small and medium entrepreneur. And this is a good story. It's sewing is something which is typical for microfinance, as well as the second one, which I also sent you a picture. This is in Kenya. I don't know if you have that one. Yeah, exactly. It's a farmer. This person is called Richard. He was actually working in the Kintuguri area in Kenya. He wanted to buy a cow producing high quality milk. And nowadays he has more than five cows. It starts growing steadily over time. He can produce the milk. And what we can see, I think I sent to you all another picture of the same case, second one. Not that one. However, second one, which shows exactly how important it is. We have
I think both the pictures are on the same slide.
So on the right hand side, sorry about it, didn't see that. You see the two person in the middle. These are so-called loan officers or credit officers, and these people are very important in the financial industry, since what they are doing, if you compare it to the western part of the world, if you apply for a loan, you got that paid off, then you start to do whatever the business one, and you're based on yourself. And in this microfinance business,
nobody comes to control you here in Europe, right?
Yeah, that's right. And what is different in microfinance? So these two loan officers, they're kind of sparring partners. So they do the business plan with the borrowers. They give them, they stick to the plan. They control the plans together. They discuss the business plan. If numbers are not that what they have expected at the beginning, they do some changes and so on. So and this is what I experienced as well in my field trips. So these are most important in the business, since there's a daily coaching, a weekly coaching, and this is also a very important success factor. Apart from that, I think the most important, when we're talking about how this has been so successful over time, microfinance in general, so the different reasons for it's decoupled from the most of the financial markets in globally. This is one point, but one point which I want to outline here is what it depends, especially also from the nation, is apart from the figures, you give them kind of self-esteem. You know, if you start a microfinance business and you have a contract with a borrower like these two case studies, these farmers or this sewer, it's self-esteem, the joy of life, and this has a big impact on people in the area. You know, this is apart from financial figures, and self-esteem, joy of life, and sense of life, to give them back the sense of life, because in poverty, people living in poverty, usually they don't know what to do, they have no plans, and this is a big impact on the area, which is, I think, also a very important social impact.
And I think you also forgot hope, because you suddenly give them a hope, yeah, hope to grow, exactly, to learn hope, something, hope, achieve something more.
Yeah, yes, and also you can...
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, exactly. What I just wanted to confirm what Ben said. I mean, this is we are often talking about business, about figures, yield, helping them to build up livelihood in terms of finance, of everything. That's all good. But this is something which I think is very important, that this positive future they have, mm-hmm, and start the business prosperous and everything. So this is really important.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at them, they're like stuck in a cage of poverty, and you give them a chance, yeah, to break out of that cage and become whatever they want to become.
Exactly, and this is also because that's the last chance. If you're talking about how is the default rate, yeah, so low, it's, mm-hmm, many reasons for it. Just out explained how with these loan officers, these coaching and everything, but of course it's the last chance. Otherwise, so they're really interested in doing this, and you can see the success, and you see how the joy of life life is returning, yeah, to them, and they see how the people and the families, they can send the children to school, for example, mm-hmm, and this is this motivates them to do more than this and to expand and to grow, and this is mm-hmm, I think the key of microfinance.
Mm-hmm. Reto, how is the whole process work? Because to understand, usually what we see that there is an investor and it's microfinance fund, intermediaries and end client, right?
Exactly.
So how do you act here? Do you also select, you don't select a little project yourself, right? You invest in microfinance institutions, I suppose, in emerging market countries.
Exactly. I mentioned already, and I think we have a graph to explain that a bit exactly. Yeah. So mm-hmm, you can see this is how microfinance works, not only with our fund in general. So we have the investors, the different ones can be banks, can be private investors, can also be NGOs. We are also quite big investors in microfinance. They invest in the fund, in our case, it's Nebel Microfinance Fund, and we do invest in so-called microfinance institutions. These are small banks in the region, since it's not possible for us to invest directly in end borrowers. This is too complex. We give them the money, and our counterparty of the fund is the microfinance institution, so-called MFIs. And then they do select the micro entrepreneurs. The two cases I just outlined with the sewer and the farmer, these all be all the due diligence process and everything will be done by the microfinance institutions. But mm-hmm, our investment team is in a steady collaboration, steady communication in the whole process. You know, they select the microfinance institutions. This is direct the counterparty, but in general, mm-hmm, it's a close collaboration.
Reto, and do you have any control on interest rates which micro entrepreneurs are paying back to development financial institutions, to microbanks? Because there have been several scandals, you know, in microfinance industry, exactly, about that it's, they need to pay too high interest rates, you know, and so do you have any control on that?
Yes. So you must be knowing, in India there was once a case, I think 7 or 10 years ago, when a government had to clamp down because some farmers committed suicide.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a big important. This is really important. Yes. So what we do is we want to be. We check that on the due diligence process. We want to see the loan books. We want to see how the interest rates are in these counties. Of course, in every county, it differentiates, of course. Different other factors like inflation and so on. But we don't want to see or want to invest in credits which have a higher interest rates than the average of the country. So we want to, mm-hmm, explain from the microfinance institution exactly how this process works, and we will check that. We also do usually on-site due diligence process. We check all these books. I mean, this for us. I mean, we want to do something good. We want to help, and mm-hmm, with the foundation on the back, we have these this order to be fair in terms of interest rates. And we definitely control that, of course, yes, on our frequently review of the microfinance institutions.
Okay. How did you make this possible? Yeah, sorry.
No.
Wanted to say something.
No, but you mentioned it's completely true what he's saying about the microfinance, that that it's really making very important what is the percentage of the rent or the interest rate the end lender is paying. So that's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, Reto, how do you manage all the market-related risks and interest rate? And are you also starting to consider environment-related risk?
Because that is also becoming more and more important now.
Exactly. So this is quite a big topic of us. We have already, so we have basically our credit, I need to read it, credit rating internal strength assessment. So this is called how internally we do that. So this is a framework we established on our own from the asset management team, from the investment team, which we steadily review, and environment is a big topic on that. So we have already a couple of investments environmental. We have actually three investments which have a climate-linked insurance part. So on the investment side, climate it's getting more and more important. But also, I mean, credit risk assessment is key. And again, here it's not something which can be done on second research, so it needs to be done as a primary research from asset management team, and therefore it's important to have an experienced team for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Reto, on your website you write pure microfinance. What do you mean by that? You know, now we've heard that all microfinance is quite a complex multi-stakeholder environment and investment sector. So what is pure microfinance?
Yeah, pure microfinance in our view is we don't want to mix up with equity investments and so on. We want to stick to that. Pure microfinance, in a way, it's only debt. So we do only debt, not equities. This is what we understand. That is what our clients want. And also pure in a way that we invest in this niche of small and medium enterprise. We don't want to scale up and go in other markets, not other markets, other market segments, I would say, in this way. So pure is what, so this is what microfinance was at the origin, at the beginning, and we want to stick to that. Means our fund cannot be, we have not capacity to whatever. I don't want to mention a size, basically. It's an internal process we work for, but of course, it's not something which we can exceed to specific. It's open. It cannot be always open. There is limits, of course, when you cover this strategy, but this is what we understand with pure microfinance.
And is there some special strategy you are using that makes EMF special to manage your stakeholders or deal sourcing? Is there something special or unique strategy you have in place?
Of course, there is something unique.
Unique is exactly the niche part of the fund. I would say this is a niche investment strategy. This is one thing, but on the other hand, we are, I think it's an entrepreneurial spirit. Again, this not related or connected to any banking business. I don't want to blame banks, of course, but we are a foundation. This is different. The investment, what you focus on the investment strategy is a bit unique, and the culture in the company. So we are entrepreneurial spirit, so means we are very close in relation to our investors. We communicate very closely. We want, this is a quite important point, we want to bring the investors closer to these end clients and these countries to invest. For example, when we started this, we do some webinars, which we on different webinars we try to explain how different countries work, how this is working, how microfinance works in different countries. For example, in the last webinar we explained how it works in India, for example. then you can listen to people in our organization working for that specific part of microfinance. This is very important to build these bridges, you know, that people can understand. Oftentimes, if you heard about microfinance, it's a good thing, but how does it feel like? And this is what we want to do. And on very transparent what you're doing. I mean, we also organize, hopefully we can do this going forward after the COVID crisis, to organize some field trips to our investors. So we can see how it works locally, to see, to get a feeling, to get an impression how important that business is in these countries.
And these webinars are only for your investors, or it is open to all?
It's basically for investors, basically also for prospects, of course, interested in investing in the product. I can also send, we have it on our website, by the way, so you can take it from there and get an impression how it works and how our DNA is at least.
And your website is enabling.li.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Radu, and what is the minimum investment size in the fund? Can I invest with 100 francs?
No, it's not possible. Basically, the fund is a so-called qualified investors. For qualified investors, it's a classical AIA structure. So the minimum investment is $200,000. So just for qualified investors, it's not for private investors. And yes, but...
This is what I was expecting, but maybe, you know, my hope is one day anyone can invest with 100 bucks and create impact.
Yeah. Right. I think it's, as I mentioned, you should. We need every dollar, of course, but this is how the fund structure is, at least. It's not possible.
The current system is just not enabling, even to enabling.
Yeah. Yeah, we work on that. We're not reached the final stage, so it's a lot to do, still a lot to do, and looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Reto, we wanted to change into ESG policies topic now. So, you know, now, especially for those who don't know what are ESG, it's environmental social governance criteria. So now a lot of regulations are coming up. And while most of the asset clients are focusing on the environment and governance, few only on social aspect. So what is your opinion? Is the cause and effect of it that most are not focusing on the social aspect?
Yeah, true. I mean, ESG is especially in Europe. It's all over now. So regulations will take place next year. You mentioned the EU, the European Union has been implemented a new law. You need to be transparent to your clients. You need to explain and report in terms of sustainability. ESG scorings, it's a huge thing coming, it's a huge wave coming, and I'm pretty sure it will change the financial industry in general over the next years. Of course, it will not stop in 1 year. It's here and will not disappear anymore, luckily, is my hope. Mm-hmm. But currently it's the environmental part, the E out of ESG is very on focus. A lot of people with the green bonds and different things, so they focus on that part of the ESG. And I think the S could be the next one. So it's not many products in the space for the mass investors to invest in. There are, of course, always projects individually. But microfinance is a proven concept that's been in place for many years now. We are definitely not the first one, and a proven concept. And I think this is getting more and more of importance to focus on that S after E. I don't know how long it takes, but some of them have already started. I mean, it's a topic which is quite interesting and quite good talked about, to be honest. But currently it's more on the E, but I think it will be the S going forward soon.
Mm-hmm. And how is it actually for new players? You know, if now a bank wants to set up a new microfinance fund, what are the hurdles or policies? Is it easier? How is the process would go on then? Or can you maybe help also to some financial institutions to be a white label fund for them?
This is exactly a good question. The entry barrier is very high. I mean, when we're talking about the last minutes, then probably the viewers can feel how difficult it is, since it's not, you need to have experienced team, of course. How, I mean, it's a people's business. It's all, it's everything is people's business, but it's more people's business in this field, since you need to understand the business, how microfinance works. You need to have contact to these MFIs. You need different countries. You need to have a setup of all in emerging markets, and to get the right people, it's quite difficult. So it's better to focus on an experienced team, an experienced setup, which is doing this only this for many, many years. I would say it's not like an equity fund. You can say, okay, I'm have the experience, I have the knowledge. I can just do it on my own. This is here totally different.
And what about the white labeling? Can a financial institution use your funds?
Yeah, that's basically possible. Yeah, so I mean, of course, yeah, this is only the it works, but they cannot. White labeling,
you know,
is.
I would say that the banks should not reinvent the wheel. You know, there are so many successful impact investing funds out there. And to set up a new fund and to have 3 years track record, you know, all this kind of standard, it always takes time, right? So while not white label a fund from experienced team like yours,
exactly.
Right? So you would be considering something like that. I'm just trying to activate some banks in Liechtenstein and Switzerland, maybe around.
and talk, just another question, is it your fund, is, you said you had the EU license and Swiss, but what about funds or family offices from countries like Taiwan or Hong Kong? Can they also invest in your fund?
Yes, it depends. So we cannot say that in general. So basically, on individual cases, it where the client is located, but it's more for European clients, of course. This is the main target group. But it's legally wise a bit complicated to explain that in a couple of words. But in specific cases, we need to check that.
Okay.
Reto, another question: as you mentioned that you are also focusing. I mean, you are focusing on the societal aspect completely. Can you please share some more information about it? How do you do that?
So basically what we are doing is two things. When we select MFIs, we have credit risk assessment, sorry. And of course, we do also check our MFIs in terms of how they the social life aspects of the investments. And what we also do apart from that, we have an impact report, which we try to figure out and to show how the impact in general is. So this is quickly the graph of the yield. Quickly
looks amazing,
how,
by the way. Yeah, I mean, it's from 2009, right? From 2009.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite stable, and as mentioned, this is from a portfolio point of view quite important. It's not really correlating to other asset class, and it's quite stable, and it's a good combination, and it helps to reduce the risk return on the portfolio quite heavily. And as mentioned, on the different crises, it's been stable, proven of many years. It's not even we started in 2008. There is an indices, microfinance indices called MSX. He has a longer track record, and you can see even in 2008, the financial crisis took place. All of us remember that. There was no default rate. There was all stable returns. So,
right.
this is how it is. But I wanted to quickly outline regarding the impact report. Quickly, we have this impact report coming out every year, showing what is the impact of the fund. For example, we are currently, to give you just a couple of figures, as I mentioned, 200,000 people are actually impacted by the fund. worldwide. We have over 54% are female. It's also a big important thing in microfinance. It's a women business, at least. So most of the borrowers are women. Nothing to do that women's are. It's just about the. I mean, this is topic.
We are just more responsible, you know.
It's more about the risk. Men's are in general mainly more risky than women, and this is probably also the reason why this has been successful. Most of the loan, the borrowers are actually women, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we check also, I mean, 84%, we have this all in the impact report, 84% or 83% of our microfinance institution invest have a female representative in the boards. So we mm-hmm. try to, we have an internal selection program, which is focusing on these social aspects, which you want to also to not only on the investment on the borrower side to be something based on impact, also how these companies work in terms of social engagement, the MFIs, you want to be transparent and clear that they're also doing something in terms of social impact. Sorry.
Wow, Reto, time is flying, you know, so it was amazing conversation. I really missed some finance also conversations like that, you know, so thanks for sharing with us. I have just one last question to you, and it's not a question, it's more like your message to the audience, call to action, whatever you want to say to them, to act.
Correct. Yeah, I think it's we have roughly 1.7 million people, billion people that still not have access to financial to bank accounts. Mm-hmm. People live in poverty, so then we need to do something. And our fund is a bit unique in the space. We are based on a charitable collective foundation in a small place, Liechtenstein, which is very stable. And we do this business for many years, since 2008, with a long track record. And we have a very fantastic investment team with also long experience in that field doing this. And only this pure microfinance. And I think with the current yield of 4% per year is a very attractive yield, even in the interest rates environment currently, you know, with all these negative interest rate environment, it's I think quite attractive. And yes, I'm open for any questions, and you can always contact me, and I'm available for any questions might arise.
Thank you, Reto. Thank you for joining us today, and
yeah,
good luck
too.
Good luck with all the future development of the fund and microfinance.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we welcome you also, because as you know, all our guests get welcomed to the ecosystem of impact investment. That's the Chamomile ecosystem. So
yes,
we invite
true.
You also to become a member of the Chamomile, and just let us know and we will upgrade it.
So you
okay, great. Sounds good.
Membership there.
Yes,
thank
of
you
course.
Very much.
thank you both.
You
and thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Thank you.
See you around. It's
bye-bye.
A neighborhood country.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, I have one question. Why am I not a billionaire? You know, I could scale up so many impact investing funds, microfinance funds, you know.
There are billionaires who are doing it. There are many of them.
Bill so Gates this is a call to action from my side to everyone who has billionaires, who are billionaires, or at least has 200,000K.
Yeah, exactly.
In microfinance funds.
And like the fund, because this made it clear that these kind of funds do exist. So when you are looking for investment of your money to also get some return on it, but also make a big impact to people's life, then please look into funds which are available like these funds, like the fund of Reto Enabling in Liechtenstein.
Yeah, and with this, dear viewers, our show of today, the seventh episode of season 3 ends. If you like it, please subscribe below at youtube.com/SwissImpact.
Okay, and I have to disappoint you, Sweta. So next week,
what's happened?
We are traveling again to a far, far away country.
Where?
To Taiwan.
Oh,
from
cool.
where we have a former legislator, and he's also the vice chair of Taiwan FinTech Association, Mr. Jason Su. And he's in the media, he's quite famous, he's known as the crypto congressman, to share about how the massive technical industries and financial sectors of Taiwan are looking into the impact investment, but more importantly, how the ultra high net worth individuals and family offices and asset managers in Taiwan are also looking into this sector of impact investment. So that will be next week. And which is very amazing when he told me he's also going to talk about the impact of impact investment in the AI world. The world we are going into.
Sounds amazing. I hope till then you get your voice back.
Yeah, exactly.
So to all SMEs, entrepreneurs, join our courses at Chamomile. Keep updated and thanks for watching us. Act for your future.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Pachauri and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable a paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.